compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Good morning, and thank you. Thank you, thank you for all of your generosity during Pledge Drive. Just a word about that. By the way, Pledge Drive is over, and here's the update. We had a $3 million need, and we surpassed it by 10%. So we made it to just a shade under $3.3 million. Thank you so much for that. We're very grateful. If you didn't have a chance to participate because you were ill or otherwise distracted, please feel free. We're going to hold the door open for a couple more days so you can go to relevantradio.com or use the Relevant Radio app and make your pledge. But Pledge Drive is over. And again, thank you so much for your generosity. The number to dial to be on the program with me is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. I have got a pile of emails that came in over the weekend and some even longer ago than that. So while I'm waiting for your phone calls, I will share with you some of these emails. So this is one from Anonymous, who's listening in Minneapolis. And the subject line is spouse refuses to do NFP. NFP being natural family planning. I don't think I need to explain it, especially since there are children listening. So you get what he's talking about, right? So he says, I've spoken to over five priests in confession and have one of them as a spiritual director. And they all agree that I should continue using a condom so that she, his wife, doesn't turn to using an abortifacient. And by that, I assume he's referring to the hormonal pill, which often is abortifacient. I'm very concerned, he says, that me giving in to using a condom is a mortal sin, since in usual circumstances, it is. The priests say, since I keep telling her that us doing it this way is wrong and praying for her that it's all I can do, that the church doesn't expect me to abstain. When I went into this marriage and she agreed that we would be pro-life and follow the church's teachings, but if they're wrong, referring to the priests, then am I expected to never engage in marital intimacy with my wife in fear of leading to mortal sin if I give in to this act? First, let me say how much I appreciate and am grateful for the ministry of our priests. I mean, we have the sacraments because of them. Sacrament of the Holy Eucharist, the sacrament of confession, etc. But I must say, in spite of my admiration for and gratitude to the priests, these five priests, every single one of them, if this is what they're telling you, they are wrong. And this is bad pastoral advice. It's contrary to the gospel of Jesus Christ. It's contrary to what Scripture says about this. It's contrary to what the church has always said about this. So let me break it down into the component parts. First of all, as a general moral principle, you can never do something that is intrinsically evil for a good outcome. And in this case, the issue is that they're telling you that it would be morally permissible for you to use a condom because God, of course, doesn't expect you to, you know, live a life where you have to be continent with your wife because some other issue, which in her case is her unwillingness to engage in marital intimacy unless there is a way to prevent conception. Now, whatever her reasons may be, and it's not for me to know what they are, the fact remains that this act in marriage is intended to be procreative and unitive, meaning that the act itself is ordered toward procreation. It doesn't mean, of course, that every act results in procreation. It happens very few times, taken in toto, as they say. But it has to be ordered toward its final goal. And the final goal, even just considering the way in which human physiology works and the complementarity of male and female, doesn't work with two males, doesn't work with two females. But the complementarity of male and female means that you can see, even just in the physiology and the act itself, that its goal, it is ordered toward procreation. Doesn't have to result in procreation, and most often it does not, but it has to at least be open to that. I had a conversation with a young man yesterday who I hope is less confused about this issue than he was before, And that is, his concern was that you have to be in your heart and mind desiring the possibility of procreation. And that's not what the church means when it says be open to life. Being open to life is specifically here a physiological description of the act, so that it's not conducted in a way that is, that forecloses on the possibility of God blessing that couple with a child. So just that's a preliminary. So with this in case, or with this case in mind, the suggestion that they're giving you is immoral. They're telling you to, that it's okay for you to do something immoral. That's pastoral malpractice. I wish it hadn't happened, and what can I say? But the clear, continuous teaching of the church has been that the marriage act must be performed in a way that has that openness to the possibility of life. So any barrier or chemical or surgery or action that might be performed that would prevent that from happening is seriously sinful, because it completely distorts the meaning of the act itself. The act is an act of total self-giving. And you're not giving yourself totally when you say you can have all of the, you can have all of me except for my fertility. And this is true for the man or the woman. So to your next question then, if your wife is unwilling to at least experiment with NFP, she might find that it's, you know, it's good for her, it's good for the marriage, it's green, i.e. no chemicals, good for Mother Nature, there are no hormones going into the water table, which is what happens, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a good option if there is a serious enough concern for not wanting to have children at a given point. But you cannot, and by what I'm saying here is not that you can't, because obviously you can do anything you want. You should not engage in contraception, because that just complicates the problem and it adds another sin to an already difficult situation. So what about the last question that you're asking about? What about abstaining? Well, I'll put it this way. If you're looking at this and saying, I have a choice here. I can either refrain from doing something that I know is sinful, or I can engage in that act that I know is sinful so that I can get the pleasure. And my wife too, for that matter. But you see, it becomes an act of pure hedonism. And it becomes intentionally an act of pure hedonism. There's no procreative dimension to it when this is introduced. So if you want to have the, you know, the black and white, read the Catechism of the Catholic Church. It will give you the specific examples of, but it's an echo of the church's perennial teaching on this, and that is that every act must be open to the possibility of life. Some people say, yeah, but what about women who are past menopause, or people who are elderly, or there'd be no way that they could conceive a child? Or what about if the wife had ovarian cancer and she had a hysterectomy? Or what about? You know, that kind of argument is not really an argument, because as long as the act itself is open to that possibility, even though the possibility seems virtually nil, it's morally permissible. So my heartfelt advice, Anonymous, is don't listen to that bad advice. I'm sorry to have to say that. But don't listen to that bad advice. And the fact that you're even writing to me tells me that your conscience is troubling you at some level. And that even though five priests have told you that this is okay, somewhere at a deep level, you know this is not right. So you're getting a sixth opinion. I'm glad you did. I'm glad that you reached out on this issue. And Reverend Fathers, please, in the confessional, I beg of you, tell people the truth. Don't tell them something that's not true. This is not what the church teaches. In fact, it's diametrically opposed to the church's teaching on this. You're not doing the married man or the married woman any favors by giving bad advice like that. And not only is it going to harm them and harm their marriage and possibly even jeopardize their eternal salvation, it will also jeopardize your eternal salvation. And I know you don't want that. So I'll leave it at that. 888-914-9149. Now we have, I want to make sure that we have enough time for this audio, Cyrus, the one that we were talking about before, the interview between Piers Morgan and a UK reporter who's in Israel right now. He's, you know, looking and reporting on the Gaza-Israel clash right now. Do we have enough time to play that, or should we wait till after the break? I'm wondering if we should wait.
I think we could get started if you want, but if you want to do it all in one segment with no breaks, then we should wait.
Oh, okay. So what if we did the first segment, then go to the break, and maybe even get the first two segments and then go to the break and then wrap it up on the other side? Does that sound okay?
I'm fine with that.
All right. Well, you press the button, so I want to make sure.
Yeah, sounds good. Okay,
so let's do this. So I'm going to set this up. So Piers Morgan, a British television commentator guy, you probably have seen him. You'll probably recognize his voice. He's very well known in the UK and here. He's interviewing this reporter who's in, he's got a military helmet. He's got a bulletproof vest. I mean, so clearly he is in the middle of a dangerous situation. In fact, there's a point in this interview where they're getting shot at by, I guess, like a rocket or a missile or something, and they think they might have to take cover. Piers Morgan is comfortably ensconced in his studio, probably here in the United States. So he's not in any danger, but that guy is. And he's discussing the narrative about Hamas and Palestine as such and the IDF and all the things associated with it. So why don't we start with the first snippet of this interview and take a close listen to what this gentleman is saying in response to the tropes that everybody is using nowadays. You see it all over social media, and Piers Morgan is certainly making full use of them. So listen to what Douglas Murray says in response.
What concerns me about what Israel is doing is not their efforts to get rid of Hamas, but because of the particular nature of Hamas embedding themselves amongst civilian populations with the massive amounts of civilian casualties that will inevitably come, and that figure will grow and grow and grow. Are we not, as Barack Obama warned, are we not creating here just an opportunity for far greater radicalization of all those young Palestinians who watch their loved ones get killed? Why would we imagine that at the end of all this, they're going to want to do anything other than to become a new version of Hamas in wanting to exact revenge for what happened to their families?
Well, two things. One is, if you just follow the logic of what Barack Obama said, then you just shouldn't do anything if you're Israel. You should be attacked and just sit back and say, great, we'll wait for the next one. But the second and more important thing is, your question supposes that there is a sort of peaceful Palestinian population in the Gaza who would love a two-state solution and then a few bad apples in Hamas. I think that's not true. Why is it that when one of the victims of the music festival, a poor young German Jewish girl who it seems was raped and then brutally murdered and taken into the Gaza naked. Why was it that you can find, and anyone can find this online, a crowd of ordinary Gazans, it wasn't Hamas, it wasn't a Hamas rally, ordinary Gazans spitting on her body, hitting her body, mutilating her body further as it went down the street. Does that strike you, Piers, as a placid population of peacenik types who are just desperately waiting for a two-state solution to be put back on the table for the millionth time in the last 70-something years? It doesn't seem like that to me.
No, but there are over 2 million people in Gaza, and there weren't 2 million people in that video clip. There were a few hundred. So I don't like to make...
Yeah, well, a few hundred at random. A few hundred at random. And did you see anyone in it saying, hey, guys, stop. We're not meant to mutilate the bodies of girls or rape them in public. No, I didn't see that.
But then what you're really articulating, correct me if I'm wrong here, but isn't what you're articulating really an endorsement of collective punishment where you assume they're all guilty?
No.
And if they don't stand up to Hamas, they're also guilty. Well, and that's where people have a problem, I think, with the moral line here, which is
if you hold
all the Gazans equally responsible, then is that not collective punishment, which is illegal?
Well, first of all, there is some responsibility for the peoples in the Gaza. If you elect Hamas And they kill Fatah, and then they remain in power for all of the years afterwards. I'm afraid that there is some responsibility of the people in that situation. You know, when the Germans had Adolf Hitler come to power and voted for him, we in Britain took the view that the German people were responsible in some way. So I'm not for collective punishment per se, but nor am I for this idea that there is something unique going on in the Israeli-Gaza context that we in Britain couldn't understand.
Actually, there is one unique thing.
In our own history, we've done very similar things.
But there is one unique thing, which is that the population of Gaza is pretty unique in that nearly half of the population are children. That is a unique situation.
No, I'll tell you what's unique about the population of Gaza. It's the only population in the world where people routinely claim Israelis are committing genocide, but which has a population boom all of the time. I mean, that strikes me as being quite an interesting thing about the Gaza. But as for the moral currency, I want to make a very, very important point, if I can say so, on this, which is, you know, people quite often abuse history and they say things all the time. I mean, about the only thing anyone from history knows is about the Nazis. Here's something I can tell you with absolute certainty, Piers, having not just seen some of the results of what Hamas did on the ground here in Israel a few weeks ago, but having watched the videos of the unedited footage, which I was one of the journalists was sadly allowed to see the other day. I can tell you one thing. The comparison between Hamas and the Nazis is insufficient. And I... Sorry, there's an incoming... okay. Incoming.
So there, we're going to pause for a second. So in the middle of this very incisive interview, a rocket is launched and it looks like it might hit right where this guy is standing. So he doesn't die. He doesn't, the rocket doesn't hit where he is, as you'll hear in a moment. We'll take a break and we'll come back. I want you to hear this because it's not talking about Israel so much or IDF so much or what happened on October 7th so much, but many of the tropes and themes that are commonly discussed nowadays. This guy has got a lot of insight into this, and I wanted to share it with you. Whether you agree with him or disagree with him, I think he's about as articulate as I've ever heard in looking at some of these issues. So we'll be back with the rest of this. Piers Morgan, and what is this gentleman's name again? What is his name?
Douglas
Murray.
Murray.
Okay, thank you. So Piers Morgan interviewing Douglas Murray. Douglas Murray's on the ground. They're just outside of Gaza reporting on this. And we'll get back to that right after this quick timeout. This hour is supported by Notre Dame Federal Credit Union. Join the nation's largest Catholic-oriented credit union and receive $200 when you add a direct deposit. Learn more at NotreDameFCU.com/join. That's NotreDameFCU.com/join.
Compelling insights. Unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Okay, so just to set this up for you, if you're tuning in right now, we're listening to some audio from British journalist Piers Morgan. I'm sure you've seen him, you've heard him. This is from Talk TV. He's interviewing a war correspondent journalist named Douglas Murray, also British, who is in, he refers to it as the Gaza. He is there now and has been for a while. He's viewed the unedited GoPro videos that the Hamas terrorists filmed of their attack on the Israelis on October the 7th. He doesn't talk about what's in those, but just as a little aside here, from the people that I have seen on social media in interviews, for example, talking about it, they say that it's the most horrendous thing they've ever seen. They hope that the public at large never sees these things. And I certainly don't want to see them. But these are the unexpurgated, unedited, whatever you've seen on TV has been edited, put it that way. And these videos are unexpurgated, unedited, and they tell even more horribly the reality of what took place that day. But that's not per se what they're talking about. But Douglas Murray, as part of his response to the questions raised by Piers Morgan, he mentioned that he had just recently seen, I think it was about an hour's worth of this unedited GoPro Hamas filmed carnage. He is in a conversation with Piers Morgan about, now that this has all happened and now that the IDF has attacked Gaza, counterattacked Gaza, etc., Piers Morgan is sort of cycling through all of the standard media tropes, media themes, the talking points, the whatabouts, the you know, all the things that you're hearing people saying. And he's offering a different perspective that I have not heard in the mainstream media before. So the first part, he gets to the point where there's a rocket fired. It's about, they think it's about to hit where they are, so they run for cover. It doesn't hit where they are. Everybody's fine. Then they come back to the camera and they continue the interview. So you're not going to hear that part of it because it's superfluous. But he's responding to these things in a way that I just think people should consider, because it's another way of looking at this. He talks, Cyrus, we got to the end and he was talking about the Nazis.
Yeah, insufficient.
And how did he put it? He says it's an insufficient. How did he say it?
The comparison to the Nazis is insufficient.
Mm-hmm. Between Hamas and the Nazis. That's right. So he's now going to expand on that theme. So let's take a listen.
But just if I can just finish this point, you know, this. Sorry, there's a lot of banging going on. But anyway, we'll keep going.
Well, look, if you need to stop, Douglas, we understand.
No, don't worry. If we need to stop, I'll run to the show.
Pause it for a second. Thanks. Pause it. Thank you. When I first watched this video the first time around, and Piers Morgan said that he seemed a bit eager for the interview to end. In a way, almost like this is almost like an excuse to interrupt this interview, because it wasn't going the way Piers Morgan, I think, wanted it to go. That was my impression. And maybe like he was looking for a convenient excuse to not continue. But alas, it was not to be. So here's the continuation of that conversation.
The thing that struck me, you know, Piers, about seeing the 7th of October footage was that even the Nazis were actually ashamed of what they did. You know, SS battalions who spent their days shooting Jews in the back of the head and pushing them into trenches had to get very, very drunk in the evening to forget what they had done. The Nazi high command famously had to sort of get around the problem of soldier morale, because the soldiers knew this wasn't exactly what their lives were meant to look like either. I tell you one very big difference. If you look at the footage, the raw footage, and I really hope people don't on a wider scale have to view what I viewed the other day. If they see it, they will see something that is at least as barbaric as what the Nazis did. But here's the difference. They did it with glee. They were deeply proud. You see people trying to, you know, taking the head off a young Israeli man with a shovel and then calling their parents back in Gaza and telling them, "Father, father, I've killed ten Jews with my own hands. Get mother on the phone. I want to tell her how great a job her son has done." You know, I come back to this thing. I'm not exaggerating this. It's very, very interesting, and people need to realize. You had this situation with the Nazis, where they also were a genocidal anti-Semitic organization, but they tried to cover their crimes up. Hamas are actually proud of them, and they've said they will do them until the whole world is clear of Jews.
Yeah.
So I suggest we take that seriously, and I think that Israel is taking it seriously. I hope they continue to take it seriously, but I think the world should take it seriously, and that includes Britain. And when I hear British journalists, British commentators, and British politicians lecturing the Israelis on what they should do, I think, I'm sorry, this shows a failing in our country. It shows that we in Britain cannot enforce our laws. We don't even enforce our borders in Britain. It's us that is the weak link in the international security chain on this, not Israel.
Douglas, how does this war end? Netanyahu said yesterday that he sees at the end of this Gaza falling under Israel occupation for an indefinite period. Now, there are many people in Israel who absolutely want Netanyahu out and hold him accountable for what happened on October the 7th in this terms of the failing of defense and security. He's deeply unpopular now amongst his own people. But this whole idea that you somehow reconcile this 75-year conflict, which has blown up into warfare time and time again, by Israel ending up as a completely occupying force, that seems to me utterly untenable.
Yeah. Well, I think that, I mean, look, it's too early to tell. I would just say this, and I've said this before, but Israel is one of the only countries in the world that's never allowed to win a conflict. It has been left with this question of the Palestinians in the West Bank. the question of the Palestinians in Gaza. It's been left with this for years. And by the way, I say left with it because remember, the Jordanians could solve the problem in the West Bank immediately by taking the Palestinians therein or taking some kind of control. They don't want to. The Egyptians, I have friends who were born in Gaza when it was owned by the Egyptians, run by the Egyptians. The Egyptians could solve the Gaza problem tomorrow by allowing the Gazans into Egypt or taking control of the Gaza themselves. Nobody wants the Palestinians people. And there's this endless mistake that is being made, and it has been made all my lifetime certainly, which is that there's this unsolved problem, but it is the job of the Israelis to solve it. What is happening behind me is a demonstration of the fact that it is an insoluble problem that the Israelis keep being told to solve. Gaza, ever since the Israelis left it in 2005, could have become Singapore. It could have become a thriving place. But Hamas didn't want that. They wanted to turn it into a place. Instead of building upwards, they built downwards. Instead of building great buildings, they built great tunnels. This is a tragedy for the Palestinian peoples, but it's one that has been brought on them by groups like Hamas who do not want a settlement in this war.
So powerful to talk to you there on the Gaza border. And I'm glad that you came through what was a pretty scary moment in the middle of that interview. And I appreciate you coming back and continuing the interview as if nothing had happened. Quite remarkable to witness, I have to say, from the safety of my London studio. But I do appreciate it. And stay safe out there.
That's right. Mm.
Go ahead, Cyrus.
That's the end of the audio.
And thank you for posting that on the show Twitter feed at P Madrid Show. There's a bit more in the middle that doesn't really add to this conversation, but you'll see the whole thing if you already have it posted. I haven't checked Twitter yet, but it'll also show up on the show page, relevantradio.com/Patrick. So my reaction to that is this guy makes a lot of sense. I mean, he's saying things that I myself have thought and even talked about on the program before. So, you know, why aren't these Muslim countries like Jordan and Egypt, why aren't they accepting all of these Palestinian folk who want to leave? How come they're not accepting them? Why is that? I mean, I don't know the answer to that question, except that it sure seems like they don't want to be bothered with this problem. And it looks to me as though it's a callous way of exploiting the lives of innocent men, women, and children who just want to get away from the bombing and such. And they are political tools that are being used and exploited with their very lives by Hamas, because it's a way to turn public opinion against Israel and get what they want at the expense of these people dying. Because if they really did care about them, as I've said before, they would let them out. I saw over the weekend videos of Hamas purportedly, at least, preventing Palestinian civilians from getting out of the area where there's the most intense fighting, and shooting them and preventing them from leaving. Why is that? I mean, if it's really the humanitarian disaster that Hamas says it is and they don't want that, then why won't they let these people get to a safe place and then they stay and fight it out with the IDF? Why not do that? My view is, from what I can see, is because they don't want to do that. So that's going to be there for your consideration. Now, interestingly enough, I received an email about a week ago, I guess, a little more than that. And this is from Larry Lissing in Los Angeles. Now, the subject line is a bit crude, but it's "Patrick, you suck." And that got my attention when I saw that. It's like, oh, this should be interesting. And he says, "I decided to put that in the subject line after I listened to your show," from when he wrote the email going back a couple of weeks. He says, "You were discussing the email from a guy who got tired of listening to all the complimentary messages and Patrick worship, et cetera, et cetera." He says, "Actually, I don't really feel that way." In other words, he doesn't really feel like what he said in the subject line. He says some nice things. He says, "I do disagree with you, however, about the morality of praying for peace in Israel right now. Would you have prayed for peace after Pearl Harbor or the landing at Normandy? In fact, during the same show, you encouraged people to pray for the apprehension of the main shooter, who was still at large at the time of that broadcast. What about the words of our Lord about forgiveness and loving our enemies? Perhaps you'd agree with me that it would be a misapplication of his words to pray for peace and forgiveness while a notorious criminal is still at large. I would agree completely. The only prayer, the only appropriate prayer, is for the intention of his apprehension. So it is with Hamas. I don't disagree, Larry. I agree with you. While I respect the authority and office of the Pope, he says, I can't comply with the request to pray for peace while the IDF is still fighting a just war against Hamas, just as Paul respected Peter's authority, even as he corrected him when he was wrong. I respect the Pope's authority, but I consider it my duty before God to see this as an error. The German and Japanese people also suffered during World War II, and that's regrettable, but it was necessary to fight their governments until they were no longer capable of spreading their evil. It is the same with Hamas until they are Hamas. Now, this is a very clever play on words, Larry. I give you 10 extra points for this one, because he's referring to Hamas, the terrorist organization, and he says it's the same with Hamas until they are Hamas, J-A-M-A-S. That's Spanish for never, as in gone. He says, I will pray for the success of the IDF, not peace. When the wrong intentions are read at Mass, I still say the appropriate prayer to the Lord, which is for the triumph of good over evil, the success of the IDF, and complete destruction of Hamas. Well, Patrick, have a good day. I hear what you're saying, Larry. And as I said a minute ago, I do agree with some of those points that you're making. It is, to be sure, a deeply vexing, perplexing situation when, on the one hand, as you said, you are sometimes forced to utterly defeat, utterly vanquish, completely obliterate an enemy who seeks to do you harm. In fact, that's the church's moral teaching when it comes to self-defense, is that you as the individual and we as the collective individual society, we have the right, morally speaking, to use lethal force when necessary to prevent an attacker from killing you individually or as a society. And that's enshrined in the Catholic Church's moral teaching. So you're right about that. They have a right to defend themselves. So the vexing part of it is not that, because that's very clear. The question is, it seems to me, how do you go about doing that in a way that doesn't intentionally or as much as possible unintentionally harm innocent civilians? That's the tricky part. Tricky is not even a big enough word for it, but that seems to be the thing. And in the midst of all this, to call for prayers for peace, I understand that too, because after all, I mean, fighting and bloodshed and killing is not the ideal, obviously. And in seeking a way in which justice can be done and self-defense can be undertaken, and at the same time look for an opportunity for a de-escalation and some kind of peace, even if it's not peace of heart, at least just peace of people not killing each other, that's also a good goal. And how to achieve the two simultaneously, I do not know. But I will say what I've said many times on the program since October the 7th. This is something I don't think human beings have the brain cells to be able to accomplish. This is something that in the long run, and I hope we can look back on this someday and say, yep, there it was, that's what happened. But in the long run, it can only be something divinely coming from God himself, divine intervention. God, as Jesus said, with men, this is impossible, but with God, all things are possible, including this mess. So I appreciate you taking time to write to me. I hope you found that audio interesting. Cyrus has posted that. So we will be happy to talk about that or anything else that's interesting to you. 888-914-9149. Before we go to our break, I just want to mention one more time how grateful we are to you for your participation in Pledge Drive. It is over, meaning that it wrapped up at the end of the day on Friday. And we, thanks be to God in your generosity, we surpassed our goal of $3 million and we made it to $3.3 million. So an added 10% from God's people, so generous, and thank you. If you didn't get a chance to participate, we are making it available to you for another day or two. You can go to relevantradio.com or use the Relevant Radio app and make a pledge. If you want to be counted in this last very successful pledge drive, praise God. I'll be right back with your phone calls and more emails right after this. Looking for a new job? How about one that offers you opportunities for spiritual, social, and charitable growth? Our sponsor, the Catholic Order of Foresters, is hiring new agents today. Visit relevantradio.com/forester, an Illinois life insurance company not available in all states.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Welcome back. The number is 888-914-9149. Look forward to talking to you if you're so inclined. Let's go to Helen now in Blue Bell, Pennsylvania. Good morning, Helen.
Morning, Patrick. I'm just calling because I heard you talk about the letter that somebody wrote about contraception.
Yes, I read an email that came in from a gentleman who said that five different priests told him it was okay to use a condom because his wife would not use natural family planning. So that was the context.
Yes. And I heard you say the word abortifacient when you were talking about contraception. And yeah. I also try to get that message out. And a lot of people, when I use that word, say to me, I don't know what that word is or what that word means. And so maybe if you could just clarify exactly. I mean, I personally know what that word means, but maybe the listeners may not understand what is actually going on with these abortifacient drugs.
Sure. So in the case of the hormonal pill, which is maybe one of the most common forms of contraception, maybe is the most common form, I don't know, but it is the way in which the pill, the hormones in the pill interact with the woman's body. And sometimes, some would say more often than not, I don't know that that's necessarily true, but sometimes it will extinguish a human life that has already been conceived. So after conception, even before the unborn child moves into the womb and attaches to the uterine wall, these hormones, these chemicals can kill that conceived child. That's essentially what it means. It causes an abortion. Now, the pill doesn't always cause an abortion, as I understand it, but it does a significant amount of the time. So this is one reason why that particular form of contraception is especially heinous, because it often involves the killing of the unborn child.
Yes, thank you. That's a good explanation. And I had asked a GYN if there was any other products that actually causes this abortion-inducing situation. And she said there's other products on the out there that, even though they're not have hormones in them, they actually also cause this result. Like she said, like the IUD.
Yeah, the IUD does. The IUD, here I am a man telling you a woman, but I mean, this is knowledge that men and women can know. The IUD, its sole purpose is to irritate the uterine wall, the lining of the uterus, so that if there is an implantation, and it can do this without an implantation, but if it prevents the uterine wall from being hospitable to the unborn child. And so it has that effect by the way it's designed. And there are others as well. I'm not an expert on the various methods of contraception, but to your point, Helen, when you talk about this, what kind of reaction do you get from women who hear you explain this part of it?
Surprise. some say, oh, they don't believe it, that's not true. So I get a lot of reactions, actually. Some of them.
It's like I've never heard that before.
Correct. Yes.
Let me tell you about a resource, if I may. It's called One More Soul, and the website is One More Soul, onemoresoul.com. I believe they're headquartered in the Dayton, Ohio area. They have got a ton of resources that are medically and morally very technical and well documented to explain things, for example, about the abortifacient quality of the pill, for example. So people who say, well, I don't believe that can't be true. This is a place where they've got all of the medical and scientific literature in one place from doctors, from scientists who can verify that what you're saying is true. So you might want to use that with some of these people if they don't believe you.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for getting that message out. It's an important message. And unfortunately, it's, you know, like you said, the truth is not being told.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we try here. This is a full service show, so we cover lots of different things on any given show. So this is one of those topics that needs to be discussed from time to time. And as you say, for some people, it's entirely new. They've never heard it before. They don't know. They may even be shocked. I didn't know that. So it's a worthy topic to discuss. Thanks, Helen. Appreciate that. Let's go back to Dave now, Orange County, California. Not back to you, Dave, but let's go to you. Welcome.
Yeah, that segment on Pierce Morgan, that was really, really good. That was very insightful. I just wanted to share, we just got back from Israel about 2 weeks before this all started. I'm a member mm-hmm. of the Equestrian Order of the Knights of the Holy Sepulchre, mm-hmm. and it is a very complicated situation. We're getting reports back right now. The hospital right now, they really need our support and our prayers. They're running out of supplies. They're running out of money. There are checkpoints everywhere in the West Bank. We spent 3 nights in Bethlehem. It was really enlightening. Mm-hmm. And
had you been to the Holy Land before, Dave, or was this your first trip?
As part of our mission as a member, we are supposed to go to these pilgrimages.
Right.
And by the way, we may have met the next pope. The Patriarch of Jerusalem is an amazing man. But to get back to the West Bank, it's really complicated. We're at the university, and one of the college students says, I've never been to the Mediterranean Sea. She can't get a visa to get out of there. Mm-hmm. So the complication of it is beyond our comprehension, and we need to support them financially, prayer-wise. It's really a difficult situation. And
let me interject, if I may, Dave. So I too, am a member of the Equestrian Order. Nancy and I are, and so I'm right there with you, and I understand the urgent need for prayer support and, to the extent possible, financial support. But let's not, I want to make sure people understand that the Equestrian Order does not support Hamas, does not support a broad array of things, but specifically supports the presence of Christians in the Holy Land, in places like Bethlehem, for example. And so that's the focus, is that not to the exclusion of helping other people when possible, but the Equestrian Order does not endorse Hamas, does not support Hamas, does not support the things that have happened. And I wouldn't want anyone to get the wrong idea based on our conversation. So I want to interject that for the sake of clarity.
Thank you for that clarity, because that is exactly right. We just support need over there, and there's a lot of need. It's a great order, and it's a great, I think it's a great place to support right now, because they really need it. The Christians are just getting just squeezed out. It's just a mess. So I just wanted to share that. It's really complicated. The checkpoints are everywhere in the West Bank right now. I mean, you can't go anywhere. Doctors can't go to their hospitals. It's just a mess.
Yeah, so it surely is.
Pray.
Yeah, and if what had happened on October the 7th hadn't happened, we wouldn't be in this mess. We wouldn't be dealing with these people's lives being
better.
But yeah, it's sorry to say, you're right.
Support. Yeah.
Indeed. Well, thank you, Dave, and a shout out to all of our fellow members of the Equestrian Order, the Knights of the Holy Sepulchre. Let us pray for all those people in the Holy Land, including, and maybe most especially, those Christians who are being, as Dave put it, squeezed out. 888-914-9149. Here's a note that came in just a few minutes ago, on point, by the way. This is from Eileen, and she's listening in the UK. She's her final line is, I'm in the UK where nobody cares a fig for Pierce Morgan. That describes a lot of us in the US too. But anyway, she says, this is not what I listen for. Disappointed that you're back to giving over your airtime to your particular view of the situation in Israel. Oh, yeah. Come on, Eileen. Come on. That you're giving your airtime over to your particular view of the situation in Israel and Palestine, as there is no one Catholic way to see this horrific conflict. I'm not interested in hearing your opinion of it. I think most of the people who donated last week thought they were helping spread Catholicism, not your politics. Well, come on, Eileen. If it disappoints you, just turn the radio off. Turn it down. If it's that upsetting to you that you can't listen to a conversation about a deeply moral issue that is religious in nature, that has overtones of biblical prophecy, if that is too upsetting for you on a Catholic network, a Catholic radio program, that I'm not sure what else to tell you. But just turn it off if it's that upsetting. Now, you don't care about my opinion, but you're giving me your opinion. Should I care about your opinion about my opinion? I mean, there's room for a lot of different topics, and this program is not something that focuses on any one topic. I had a note from a guy recently. He says, well, I don't want to listen to you anymore because, you know, you used to be really great, and you used to talk all about the Bible and Catholic stuff, and you talk about... Apparently, you never listened to this program, sir, because I have been dealing with multifaceted topics, including the Bible and theology and things, but many other things besides the whole time I've been on the air, which is about 11 years now on this network, thanks be to God. So with all due respect, Eileen, I'm grateful that you're in the UK and that at least you have been listening, but my gosh, if talking about a moral and religious issue upsets you so much, then I'm not sure what else to say, but I do hope you find what you're looking for, and thank you for taking a moment to write to me. Let's go back to the phones. John in Illinois, thank you for waiting, and welcome to the program.
I want to reference that you mentioned that the Catholics teaching, if there's a, not a person, but a whole people's erasing or genocidally removing, I'm talking about the Gaza conflict and Hamas in particular. Okay. Right. Quote unquote, about 8:30 Central Time, you said it's the church's teaching to defend.
I'm not understanding your question. It's the church's teaching. I did say that, but I'm not sure what your question is.
It was in particular to do with the conflict in Gaza.
Okay.
And the, I think it was a question that came with a email that had a crude, it was the crude email.
Oh, yeah.
That had Patrick, you.
No, I know. I remember what he said. But to your point, though, John, what's the question you're asking me? I want to make sure I answer your question.
I do understand that. It's a delicate, it's an overarching issue concerning the conflict, not a particular, okay. There was a comment you made that it's the church's teaching in the context and how one group of people is to respond to such an attack as was on the 7th of October.
Let me see if I can restate what I think you're asking me, John. Tell me if I have it right. As I recall, I said that the church teaches that individuals have the right to self-defense and the collective individual, in other words, a society, could also be a country, could be a family, could be a city, whatever, that collectively we have the right to self-defense and that that's the teaching of the church. Is that what you're referring to?
John? It wasn't as much individual as collectively.
Let me give you the answer I think you're looking for. Where does the church teach this? Well, we have, for example, in the Catechism of the Catholic Church, paragraph 2263, the legitimate defense of persons and societies is not an exception to the prohibition against the murder of the innocent that constitutes intentional killing. The act of self-defense can have a double effect, the preservation of one's own life and the killing of the aggressor. The one is intended, the other is not. So that's referring to the use of lethal force. Paragraph 2308 says, all citizens and all governments are obliged to work for the avoidance of war. However, as long as the danger of war persists and there is no international authority with the necessary competence and power, governments cannot be denied the right of lawful self-defense once all peace efforts have failed. So I'm wondering, is that the kind of documentation that you're looking for?
That would be the perfect thing I was looking for here.
Okay.
And awesome. It's certainly worth the wait. Thank you.
Well, I know you waited a while, John. I appreciate your patience for that. So it's there in the Catechism. And there are a few other places in the Catechism that it does touch on the same issue, but those are two representative examples.
Yes, I'm getting into that. One was given to me by the same man that gave me Roman. I was from the public school system, but I'm catching on quick. And,
great. Well, I'm glad that you're listening to Relevant Radio. I sure am. And if you have a copy of the Catechism, it's a great way to look things up. There's an index in the back, and you'll be able to find things that will expand your knowledge of these issues. I appreciate the phone call. Well, we have to take a break. We're going to be right back, though. The number is 888-914-9149. I love it when somebody writes in to say, I don't care about your opinion on X. My question to that person is, oh, is that your opinion? Haha. I'll be right back right after this quick timeout. 888-914-9149.